ISIS Audiobooks presents an unabridged recording of The Things We Cherished, written by Pam Genoff, read by Gareth Armstrong. The moral right of the author has been asserted. This performance is owned by ISIS Publishing Limited. Chapter 1. Philadelphia, 2009. You know, don't you, that you're looking at 25 to life? Charlotte peered over the top of the file at the 17-year-old with the rows of tiny braids, who slouched in the chair on the other side of the graffiti-covered table, staring intently at his sneakers. The preliminary hearing had not gone well. Charlotte had hoped that the judge would take one look at Markan's baby face, with its wide, smooth cheeks and the unblinking, almond-shaped eyes, and know that he was not a danger to anyone, that he did not belong here. She thought that Judge Annette D'Amici, who herself had once been a public defender, might have a soft spot for a teenager with no record of prior violence, who was about the same age as her grandchildren. But in a streak of phenomenally bad luck, Judge D'Amici had called in sick, replaced for the day by Paul Rogers. Rogers, a political wannabe, who viewed the bench as a stepping stone to a higher state office, had earned a reputation as a hanging judge during his first term. He barely glanced at Markan before banging his gavel and remanding him to the juvenile wing of the city prison. Normally, Charlotte would have chalked the hearing up as a loss and gone on to her next file and courtroom, dispensing with the morning's caseload. But Markan was different. They had met almost 2 years earlier, when he'd been a scared 15-year-old brought in on a petty drug charge. There was a sparkle that told her he had intelligence, a quiet dignity in his perfect posture and the way he looked at her with those sombre brown eyes, seeming to see right through her. He had promise. She'd done all the things she usually didn't get to do with a docket of thousands of cases per year, getting Markan into a first-time offender's track that left him with no permanent record, as well as an after-school mentoring program in his neighborhood. So why was he sitting here now, dull-eyed and hardened, facing a murder charge for a carjacking gone wrong? Because it simply wasn't enough. The after-school programs amounted to only a few hours per week, a drop in an ocean of poverty and drugs and violence and boredom in which these kids had to swim every night on the streets. There had been a police chase that ended with an SUV crushed against the pavement steps of a row house, two small children pinned fatally beneath its wheels. Markan hadn't meant to hurt anyone, of that she was certain. He had a little brother the same age as those kids, whom he walked to school every day, escorted home again each evening. No, he had simply been along for the ride when the stupid plan was hatched, and he didn't have the strength or good sense to say no. Charlotte drummed the edge of the table, running her fingers along a heart that someone had carved into the wood with a knife. "If you would testify," she began. There had been three boys in the car, but Markan was the only one who had not fled the scene. "I mean, if you're willing to say who was there with you." She did not finish the sentence, knowing the proposal was futile. No one talked where Markan came from. "Don't snitch," screamed the brazen T-shirts of the kids she passed in the gallery food court at lunch. Kids ditching school and hanging out, waiting for trouble to find them. Snitching meant never going home again, never closing your eyes, and knowing if you or your loved ones would be safe. Markan would sooner take the sentence. She exhaled sharply, glancing up at the water-stained ceiling. "Anything you want to tell me?" she asked, closing the file, watching for the imperceptible shake of the head. "If you change your mind, or if you need something, have your case officer call me." She pushed back from the table and stood, knocking on the door to be let out. A few minutes later, Charlotte stepped from the elevator and made her way across the lobby of the Criminal Justice Center, thronged with prospective jurors and families of the victims and the accused, who pushed past the metal detector towards the security desk for information. On the street, she swam through a cloud of cigarette smoke left by courthouse clerks lingering before the start of their day, then paused, her eyes travelling left towards the hulking Reading Terminal Market. A walk through the open stalls, a gastronomic world's fair touting everything from Amish delicacies to low mine and cheesecakes, would have been just the thing to clear her head. But there wasn't time. As she reached the busy intersection beneath the shadow of City Hall, William Penn peering down piously from his perch atop the tower,